You're listening to the Popzara Podcast.
The State of Gaming.
Welcome back, Popzara pals. It's your host, Nathan Evans, talking about video games, talking about stuff, talking about sales on games and all that gaming stuff. That's right. It's the State of Gaming Podcast brought to you by your friends over at Popzara Podcast. And if you're not subscribed yet, you should be, because you've been following us for a very long time. I can't do it alone, though, because I got a co-host, and that co-host is none other than Lucas from The Wizard. No, I'm just kidding. Not Lucas from
The Power Wizard. Glove. It's so bad.
I love the Power Glove. It's so bad. And so are you, Lucas, but we're not going to get into that. But we are going to get into gaming, so welcome back, Corey G-Man Gallagher. Corey, welcome back.
You said it right.
I know. I'm learning.
Amazing.
From the ground up.
You can teach an old dog new tricks.
Woof, woof. I will say this before we get into it for the State of Gaming Podcast for February 2021. If you're asking where the State of Gaming Podcast was for January 2021, we didn't have one. We substituted it for another thing. What we did is we wrapped up 2020. We had a special guest, Mr. Antal Bokar from Third Coast Review. I'll put a link in the notes. It was a very popular podcast. Thank you, everybody, for making that so. Thank you, Antal, for that. And I know, Corey, we had a good time talking about the best games of 2020. I don't want to go over them again because it was a very strange list, but we will note that there. One more blur before we get into it. We mentioned The Wizard. I got The Wizard on my mind because on this very podcast, we also run a movie-themed podcast. It's called Movie Time. I know, we're so original. So we just published an episode this week, Corey, and we compared and contrasted two films that you've seen. You probably like one of them, maybe both. We did Pee-wee's Big Adventure from 1985, and we did The Wizard from 1989. Lots of Lucas on that podcast.
Yeah, no kidding.
So, I mean, it's pretty much it's the biggest thing in the movie.
The Power Glove, so. It's so bad. The only thing I really remember about that movie, which I saw when I was younger, was the trick where you can, in Mario 3, which hadn't come out yet, there's a trick you can do in the first castle where you fly above the top of the screen and you get a special warp whistle for doing it. And this was revealed in The Wizard, and I thought that was the coolest thing in the world.
By the way, in The Wizard, they make a special note to say, you're going to play a game that no one's ever seen before, blah, blah, blah. And as they're playing Super Mario 3, they're shouting, get this, do this. Like, how would you know?
You wouldn't.
You wouldn't know. And I don't want to get into it, but listen to the podcast. We have a lot of fun with it. We actually like the movie quite a bit. And those two films are related in more ways than you could ever suspect. But I'll just say this, dinosaurs unite us all. But speaking of dinosaurs, Corey, we are talking about video games for February 2021.
Hey, we sure are.
The month of love, month of Valentine's. Let's get into it. So how do you want to start this month? We're going to talk about the games. What do you want to do?
Let's talk about the games first. I like the order you have them down here, in fact.
Okay, let's talk. Let's go.
Okay, so the biggest game of this month, actually, you know, there's two really big ones, and I'm not really sure which one I'd say is bigger. We'll start with the one that I'd probably lean on, and that would be Super Mario 3D World and Bowser's Fury, which comes in one package on the Nintendo Switch.
You have this game.
I do.
You are reviewing this game.
I am.
And this game is not new, for the most part.
So it's more new than a lot of these re-releases. Let's go with that. Mario 3D World is presented as we're used to. You know, we've seen it before back on the Wii U. And it's great. You know, it was a great game then. It's a great game now. It's wonderful to have it in a format where it's readily available to hooking up your Wii U, or I guess trying to buy one if you don't have one. Because that's becoming less and less of a problem over time. I think the only really big Wii U release I can think of that is not readily available on the Switch at this point is Xenoblade Chronicles X. And I'm not going to be surprised if we see that one come out maybe sometime soon, this year, next year.
Well, let's be fair here. The Wii U, for all intents and purposes, was a system I think we both liked.
Yeah.
But did not sell well.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who say the Wii U was a terrible system, and I don't really think that's fair.
No.
I mean, it was fine.
No, it was fine. I actually had some really good games.
Yeah.
And as we've seen with the Switch, because a lot of Switch games are Wii U games.
Yeah, conveniently, a lot of those games are now available on the Switch. They tend to cost about as much, but if you can get past that, you're getting some solid stuff on your Switch.
I will say this. I was actually at the E3 in 2013 when they announced and showed off Super Mario 3D World.
Oh, yeah?
And I actually broke my rule. And I have a rule for E3, and I've told you this before. I do not play games at E3. You and I have never been at an E3 together, but you've heard of this rule for me.
For the record, by the way, I don't have the rule. I'll happily play games at E3 if there's not so big of a line.
Yeah, and that's part of the reason there is a rule, by the way, because the lines will monopolize you.
The lines are terrible, but if you get into a meeting with some of the publishers, they're happy to show you their games. I remember the first time I played Neo was at E3, And that was an embarrassment because I could not figure that game out for anything. Like, man, that game was very difficult.
You gotta grab the warp whistle.
The warp whistle, there you go. Yeah, they wear the power glove. But yeah, Mario 3D World, solid game.
You gotta get the scroll so you can beat Mega Turtle.
There you go.
Yeah, but no, Super Mario 3D World, I got wrapped into it because I got caught up in the line. I was meeting someone at the Nintendo booth. I literally got caught up in the line. I was forcibly conscripted, and I think everyone hated me because I ended up jumping. And there is nothing worse. There is nothing worse, and God bless Nintendo, but you know what I'm talking about. You've seen the Nintendo lines. It is uniformity in a way that we have never seen anywhere else at E3. The Nintendo booth is always the biggest thing at E3.
Every single time. And you have these people who come around. Back when the 3DS was a thing, they'd come around with 3DS actually chained to their bodies. Yeah, it's if you've never been to E3, it's a really good time. A lot of people say it's not very useful anymore, but I got to say, when it comes back, I'd love to go again. It's a lot of fun.
Well, they announced it's going to be digital again.
I don't know that we're going to see any return to quote-unquote normalcy until 23, maybe.
I don't know if there is a return to normalcy. I think there's going to be a pathway to new normalcy. That makes any sense?
That makes sense.
But anyway, Super Mario 3D World, I played it in the worst possible way, under the worst possible conditions, and it wasn't fun. That being said, bought the game on the Wii U. Loved it. Actually, quite a fan of this game, actually. I'm a huge fan of the 3DS version, Super Mario 3D Land.
Right.
Which,
you say 3DS version, but just to be clear, that these are two different games. They're different levels, different.
Well, that's what I'm saying. 3D Land was 3DS, and 3D World was the Wii U. And I will say this, though. Both games had gimmicks that actually worked. And I want to stress this. This is my only experience with the games up till then. 3D Land, in my recollection, Corey, is the only game that ever benefited from 3D as a technology. It used 3D very, very well. It made the game better.
Funny story. I wouldn't know much about that.
Yeah, some of us aren't pirates. Although, I may be a pirate later, and I'll tell you why. But 3D World used the Wii remote in very, very fun ways. The Wii U... What do you call it? Not the remote.
What's it called? The gamepad, I think, is what they refer to it as. Yeah, it's something like that.
Yeah, basically.
Big old tablet type thing. Simple to take with you.
Basically, Nintendo not knowing if the future was iPad or what it became with the Switch.
It is interesting to look back and see the similarities between this gamepad and Switch, and that's also why Mario 3D World is so good on the Switch.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't a very difficult thing to switch over. However, that's not all that you get with this collection. I guess collection is the right term, because you also get a game called Bowser's Fury. And I say you get a game because it's a very different experience. Mario 3D World is this kind of fixed camera platforming sort of thing, very similar to Mario 3D Land, as you said, a more stage-focused experience. Bowser's Fury, meanwhile, is fully 3D. You can go to where you want. It's kind of an open-world thing. I guess somewhat similar to, say, a Mario Sunshine or a Mario 64.
From what I've seen, though, and I haven't played the game yet, so it's all anecdotal, but it's actually, what you say open world, it's actually open world. Like, there's no hubs, there's no anything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's obviously set pieces that are meant to feel like stages, but you can go between them as you'd like. It's really neat. Like, honestly, I'm a little surprised that they didn't maybe flesh it out more and make a full game out of it rather than an addendum to Mario 3D World, but for what you're getting, I mean, it's solid.
Well, we're talking about mainline 3D Mario games, and Nintendo's always pretty inventive when it comes to these things. We just saw the return of Super Mario Galaxy, also on the Switch. Do you think anything in Bowser's Fury, like, portends what the inevitable next 3D Mario will look like?
Bowser's Fury reminded me of what would happen if Mario did the sort of Ubisoft-style, Witcher-style, open-world sort of game, and I wouldn't be surprised if that's where they go next. And it's a good idea. I mean, that kind of game is great.
You mean like Breath of the Wild?
Exactly.
I don't know. I mean, I think everyone was expecting to see a Breath of the Wild thing show up. We'll talk about that later. But I don't know. I want to see it, but I don't know. This is my age speaking. I don't know if I want to see a complete reinvention of Mario quite yet. I don't know where I am with Mario, because you take it for granted that Mario games are all different, but when you're actually experiencing for the first time, sometimes you kind of want the old Mario.
Maybe it's strange for me to feel this way. You know, I kind of assume Mario is kind of a fixed thing. Like, Mario will come out, they'll do slightly new things, but he feels a certain way, and no matter which game you're playing, it's still got that kind of feel to it. I'm the kind of person who doesn't really get worked up about the Nintendo Direct, because they're going to maybe announce some Mario, maybe announce some Zelda, maybe announce some Metroid. Everything else is gravy. I can't get that excited about it. It's wonderful. I love the games, don't get me wrong, but it's not something that I sit on bated breath waiting for.
Well, again, you take it for granted that these things have always been fixed places. And we talk about, you know, we could talk about Mario 3, for example, on the Wizard,
right,
which, by the way, people are still playing. We could talk about Super Mario Land, or excuse me, Super Mario World, which mm-hmm. people are still playing. We could talk about these things, which people are still playing. And we take for granted that the games are so radically different from each other, yet they all seem similar, but they're really not.
Yeah.
And so when you look at a 3D world, people forget this was a an attempt to make 3D Mario games play like the 2D Mario games, because, shocking, the 3D Mario games don't sell as well as the 2D ones.
Yep.
And, you know, the new Super Mario Brothers games on the DS and 3DS were megatons. They were mega hits.
Indeed.
And the 3D games were not. And so, yeah, so we'll figure it out. So, I, like I said, I'm all for reinvention and everything. But
yeah, so continuing to talk about Nintendo, though.
More Nintendo.
Yeah, more Nintendo. In fact, you know, I'm going to divert from my original plan. We'll talk about them in terms of, like, publishers. And the second one we're going to talk about then is Bravely Default 2, which is the sequel to... it's actually not a sequel. How do I put it? It's the third game in the series, to a pretty popular 3DS RPG called Bravely Default. Came out a few years back.
Shocking. Yeah. You're saying Bravely Default 2 is a sequel to a game called Bravely Default.
Well, Bravely Default 2 is a sequel to a game called Bravely Second, which is a sequel to a game called Bravely Default.
This is why you're the senior games editor.
That's exactly correct. So I've actually been playing through the original Bravely Default again some recently, just to kind of get ready for the sequel to come out. And it's a really great game. It's an interesting concept in that it takes a lot of the classic Japanese RPG concepts, like grinding. You have to grind for experience points. And that can be a pain. Maybe you don't have time. This is a portable game. So Bravely Default did something where you could speed up all the battles. You could set up an auto battle system to fight the battles for you, make the grinding faster. And then additionally, like, people love job systems in these games, these Final Fantasy games, which Bravely Default kind of is. So what do? They come up with a system where different jobs can offer different perks to other jobs. You can kind of, like, customize your characters and play how you want. It was a really solid game. Bravely Second, also a great game. I'm really looking forward to Bravely Default 2 next week.
Yeah, that's why I put it on the list.
Yep.
I knew you would ask.
But speaking of which, that's not the only big-name Japanese game. And when I said that there were a couple of games that really were the highlights of February, this is the other one I wanted to mention. That'd be Persona 5 Strikers, which just released early yesterday, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So Persona 5, I mean, everybody knows, everybody loves it. Even people who don't really play a lot of Japanese games, I suspect, are familiar with Persona 5. And it's just kind of reached this legendary status that it fully deserves. I mean, fantastic game. I don't think you've ever played it, because I don't think you're a big fan of that kind of game, but trust me, if you were to play it...
Wait. I got a history with the franchise that goes back 20 years. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and if I'm wrong, I will banish myself.
Sure.
This game, the Persona franchise, has its roots in another series.
Correct.
And that would be...
Let's hear it. Which one is it?
You know what?
You don't know, do you? Okay.
No, I do.
You are banished.
I don't want to mispronounce it, so you mispronounce it for me.
Persona is part of the Shin Megami Tensei series, which includes other games like Nocturne, which we're seeing a remaster of later this year. Shin Megami Tensei 4 came out a few years back in the 3DS. Shin Megami Tensei 5 is coming out, I think, next year. So it's a pretty long-running series, has a whole lot of fans. Persona is probably the one most people are familiar with, just it's very accessible, has a great style that people love. But this is nothing like those games, actually. Strikers is very similar to Samurai Warriors or Dynasty Warriors or Hyrule Wars, the Musou game.
Yeah, it's one of these, by the way, which we've seen plenty of, including a game that you liked but did not love. Like you mentioned it just a few seconds ago, Hyrule Warriors Age of Calamity?
Age of Calamity, yeah. That's a game that I think is going to be a lot better when inevitably we get a more powerful Switch model, because the current Switch has a lot of trouble handling it. I'm told, though, that the version of Strikers that's on the Switch is actually pretty good, which is interesting.
Interesting. That one of these would be better than a mainline Nintendo release.
Yeah, isn't that crazy? Because, you know, you don't expect that with Nintendo. Nintendo knows their hardware better than anybody. I've actually been playing Strikers since yesterday. I picked it up on PC, and it's wonderful. I mean, if you like these kind of Musou-type games, if you like Persona, if you like Shin Megami Tensei, it's got something for you there. It's got an interesting concept where it takes the RPG mechanics from Persona, where you can customize your characters, give them new spells to use, and actually bring those into these action-style fights, where you can slow down time and use your skills strategically in a way that you might not be used to from other Musou games. I like it a lot so far. It's a lot of fun.
How's the soundtrack?
Fantastic, obviously. The best part about it, if you buy the deluxe version, you get the soundtracks from all the other Persona games too, and they'll play randomly when you fight if you want.
Told you, I was at my gym about a year or so ago, and I heard Persona 5 music at my gym.
Right.
And I don't know how that happened, but I heard it because I have people on this website who won't shut up about it.
It's pretty good stuff. I'm one of those people, by the way. But going on from there.
Just one of them, but you're not the only one. Hey, that's the scary part.
So speaking of scary stuff, actually, another big game that came out recently, if you're in a certain group of people who love horror games, Little Nightmares 2 actually released a little bit ago.
What do you think? You were a fan of the first one, weren't you?
I was. I've been playing this one a little bit. It's very similar to the first one, and normally that's a good thing. You know, I'm not the kind of person who says, oh, the sequel didn't change enough, and that because of that, it's not as good a game. I think that's kind of ridiculous. If I buy whatever game 2 because I like whatever game 1, I want more of whatever game has got to offer me. Little Nightmares 2, though, is kind of weird in the sense that it doesn't really build on the first one at all. It's literally more of the same. And if that's what you want, that's great. But if you're coming in expecting a big change, there really isn't one.
When I first saw that, it reminded me of the old game Limbo. Remember that?
Yeah, it looks and plays and feels a lot like Limbo. So did the first one, in fact.
Yeah.
More recently, Inside is very similar to those games, too.
Well, that shadow aesthetic is very popular.
Yeah.
And so it's especially popular like with platforming games because I think it's probably not really intensive like graphically, so it will play on for a song on your old PC. So Little Nightmares 2, Persona 5 Strikers, Bravely Default 2. I put another game on the list only because technically it was released, but we're always so positive. But this one I think deserves to be mentioned.
You know, it's funny. One of our other editors, Chris, the guy who usually works with me and the PR people from the different publishers and such, he also played this one, which surprised me a little. And he felt kind of the same way that I did. We're talking about Werewolf the Apocalypse Earthblood, which is a game that, you know, on PopZara.
Hold on. It surprised you that our editor, whose nickname is Wolfman, whose avatar is a wolf.
You know, maybe it shouldn't have surprised me that much.
Whose favorite video game character of all time is John Talbane from
Darkstalkers. Wow.
Darkstalkers? Surprised you?
Darkstalkers, by the way, Stalkles? Blah, blah, blah. That's a way better werewolf game than this one. So on PopZara, we've got four different, I guess, ratings we give a game. We go pass, we go nay, we go yay, we go to editor's choice. And as the person who tends to write a lot of video game reviews, the way that I tend to handle these things is that if a game isn't... If I'd rather spend 8 hours of my life playing this game than going to work, it's probably going to get a yay. And it usually doesn't get a pass unless it actually doesn't work, like there are game-killing bugs. So in this case, yeah, Werewolf the Apocalypse Earthblood is better than spending a shift at work, so it gets a yay. There's a big but there, and I cannot lie. It's just not really all that inspiring. You play as a... this werewolf, his name is Cahal, and he's very edgy, and he sneaks around these different facilities battling an evil corporation called Endron.
Really?
Yes, he battles Endron as if we're back in, like, 2010, and it's supposed to be a stealth game, but if you're ever caught by the enemies, you turn into a werewolf and kill them all, so it's not really a stealth game. I think the big problem with it is that if you're coming from a place where you really like the World of Darkness series, which is what this is based on, that's a really deep and involved, like, setting. There's a lot of lore, there's a lot of interesting points that go on. Werewolf doesn't have any of that. Werewolf is like, this is the most generic, like, late 90s PS2 stealth game that you've ever played.
Well, real quick, go back to that just for a second. How is that connected? Like, explain what that world is that this game connects to. Because I'm only familiar with videos that I've seen to the game, but I see in the title they have that infamous dash.
Yes. So
unless, if the game's not Japanese, then that dash usually means something.
So World of Darkness is a popular pen and paper tabletop RPG system, and it includes games like Vampire the Masquerade, which is a pretty popular game back if you're a high school goth. There you go. Do high school golf even exist anymore? Who knows? But it includes a whole bunch of different properties where you basically play as classic movie monsters kind of brought into the modern world and given a new coat of paint. So there's one where you're a werewolf, one where you're a vampire. There's mummies, there's mages, there are Frankenstein monsters, that kind of thing. And there's a whole lot of literature behind this if you like reading stuff. And there's been a couple games, especially vampire-related games. In fact, there's going to be a new Vampire the Masquerade-related game coming out, I think, next year. So, yeah, World of Darkness, pretty popular. People who like it tend to really like it, and they're not going to like Earthblood because it doesn't really do anything with its pedigree.
Now, the Vampire the Masquerade, those games were popular, though.
Yeah, yeah, Vampire the Masquerade Bloodlines is considered by a lot of people to be one of the better games ever made. Like, it's pretty solid. Bloodlines 2 is coming out next year, and we'll see if it lives up to that. But this game certainly doesn't. And yet, I'll give it a yay, because it's competent, it's well put together for what it is. It could have just been a lot better. It could have been better does not get something a nay.
It could have been better means that you're thinking too much about what other people think. And that's not a good way to review stuff, especially when you're exposed to so much stuff yourself. I will say this, though. In the history of video games that have to do with werewolves, which is sizable, do you remember a couple years back when Sega had no direction for Sonic the Hedgehog?
And I mean, they still mostly don't, but I do remember what you're talking about.
They've kind of settled that Sonic doesn't need innovation. I think Sonic Mania pretty much put the nail in that coffin where Sonic was now going to like turn into things. Like, he's a knight, he's this, he's that.
Yeah, they just kind of were like, you know what? Actually, what people wanted is basically more Sonic and Knuckles, and that's what we've done.
You know what? I call that the Leonard Nimoy or the Nimoy approach, where you remember Leonard Nimoy spent years and years playing Spock on Star Trek. Then he made a big deal. I'm not Spock. You're Spock.
Yeah, you're Spock. Sorry.
And then
you've made enough money and spent enough time being Spock. I think you can continue being Spock. And there you go.
Yeah, and he went out with a bang. He went out in major blockbuster movies where people loved him again. Oh, yep. What a terrible life.
Yeah,
you know?
I never understood that kind of thing. But anyway, yeah, but, so I see what you're saying, though, as far as, like, just saying it could have been better is considering other people's thoughts before your own, which isn't really...
Well, my question is this better than Sonic the Werewolf game?
I mean, I think an enema is better than the Sonic the Werewolf game, so yeah.
Yeah, and the funny thing about the Sonic the Werewolf game, not even the worst Sonic game.
That's saying something. Though, again, modern Sonic is pretty good. I don't know how we got to Sonic. Anyway.
Werewolves. By the way, so before we move on, if you're disappointed, I actually saw a movie last week I want to recommend that had to do with werewolves, and it made me think of this. The Curse of the Werewolf by our good friends over at Hammer Films.
Really?
Yeah, you like Hammer, don't you?
I do.
Yeah, basically, people don't know this, but the Hammer Films were actually the inspiration for pretty much a huge portion of our pop culture. And when it comes to video games, they were the direct inspiration for the Castlevania games. And so Curse of the Werewolf came out in, 1961, starring a guy that sadly is not very popular anymore, but he used to be, Oliver Reed. You may remember Oliver Reed as the man who died in the filming of Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
And they had to CG his body back together. Oliver Reed was awesome. The makeup's pretty good. The movie's pretty melodramatic. But if you need some classic werewolf cinema, Hammer's Curse of the Werewolf, 1961, you could do a lot worse. You could probably do better, but you could do a lot worse.
Yeah, absolutely. So, sounds like it's worth a look to me.
Yeah, and let's talk about the news.
You could do worse is always a great recommendation also.
You could do worse is just like, yeah, you're pretty funny. So... See that laugh? No, so let's get into this. So we talked about the game. So we usually segue a little bit to NPD. NPD is a little fun because it's the first month of the year that we're talking about chronologically. We're talking about January 2021. NPD, which used to be the focus of this entire podcast, if you could believe it or not, which is probably why we lost a lot of you, stands for National Purchase Diary. They're pretty much the only aggregate of gaming sales. So take it with a grain of salt the same way you would fortune tellers. You know what, Corey? That actually comes into play this month because there's a game missing from the list that should have been on the list, but it's not on the list.
There sure is.
Yeah, and it's a big one.
That game is Hitman 3, and its publisher, IO, doesn't share the data with NPD. That's entirely voluntary. And just going to go along those lines, and I'm going to say that's probably why you shouldn't take any game sales reports too seriously because it's all voluntary.
Exactly, but it is a snapshot. And that's the funny thing is, like, for better or for worse, the NPD reports are a snapshot, again, of where things are. Full disclosure, we have friends over at NPD. You know who you are. So let's talk about NPD real quick, because people are expecting it.
They sure are, and we sure will. So starting off, we'll talk about the hardware, as we usually do.
The numbers aren't exact, but anecdotal evidence elsewhere points to the PlayStation 5 being a monster success.
I'm not surprised about that at all. You know, I actually managed – I don't think I talked about it in your last podcast. I managed to find one.
He finally got it.
Yep.
He tracked it down, and he traded his soul for a PlayStation 5.
And now I don't have a soul, but I got a PS5, so I think I won in the end.
Yeah, but you didn't get the one you wanted. I think I can say this. You got the digital
one. I got the digital one, and here's the thing. I'm trying to think of the last time that I bought a physical game out of anything but a novelty. Like, oh, you know, I bought this and I'm just going to keep it sealed. And that's how it usually goes for me when I buy physical games these days, except for the Switch. And even then, I don't feel really comfortable with buying Switch games physically if I'm going to play them, because I worry about losing them if I go traveling and such. It's just not... Yeah, I'm fine with the digital revolution, personally.
I do have a little story about why you should consider optical, though. I was with our tech editor, Herman Exum, and we were looking at televisions, because the best time to buy a TV is after the Super Bowl. Lots of open box specials.
Right.
And we're looking at the new technology. We're looking at OLEDs, QLEDs, mini LEDs, all that LED stuff that doesn't mean anything, really. And it turns out the best way to test a television, did you know this? Here's a little PSA. If you're going to spend $1,000 or whatever on a TV, don't buy it sight unseen. You play that thing. If you go to a Best Buy, they will let you test things if you ask them. We brought in some media, and it turns out the only thing that I had in my house that actually could play discs, Corey, was my Xbox One X.
Really?
Yeah, so I brought that big, heavy brick into Best Buy, and we tried out some games, we tried out some movies, and it turns out the best way to test a television, the absolute best way if you're into it, is 4K Blu-rays. No other 4K Blu-ray is better than Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Yep.
It has perfect HDR, it's colorful and everything, and yeah, we had a lot of good time. Digital media just wouldn't have done it. We tried Netflix. The Netflix signal we got there wasn't good enough. Everything else. But no, 4K Blu-rays, there you go.
You know, people talk about things like, when you buy a digital game, you're not actually purchasing, the game, you're purchasing access to the game. And that implies a certain degree of, like, dystopian nonsense that I don't really believe in. I think that's people, like, looking for something to be worried about. Trust me, I don't think the PlayStation Network is going to go down unless they get hacked again like they did back in about 10 years ago.
Yeah,
I don't think Steam is going anywhere. You're probably fine.
If I can make a full disclosure, on the Popstar website, we're redoing how we do our databases. And we had a very important choice to make, is like, which API and database do we want? And it turns out, and again, full disclosure, we chose Amazon.
Course.
And the reason being is that they're not going anywhere.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
It's a good company to invest in. And so, like just for security and stability, like unless a nuclear bomb drops and it's the end of the world.
Yeah, like these companies own your life. They own your existence. They're not going anywhere. You should feel safe about buying a video game from them. That's just how it is.
And I will say this. You and I go poo-poo on Stadia and streaming stuff. It's not like that either. You know, Stadia's gotten worlds better. I still wouldn't recommend the service, although I do hear Cyberpunk 2077 is pretty good on it. I got accepted into the Luna beta, so I've been playing a little bit of Luna just to test it out.
Right.
Again, not my thing, but, you know, the streaming stuff is coming. And, Corey, I think you would agree that if we're talking about streaming services like Luna and Stadia, then, yeah, you could be a little dystopian. But if you're talking about stuff you buy on, like, the PlayStation Store and everything, I mean, yeah. I mean, guess what? Your NES cartridge is not going to fit in your Switch.
Correct. So. And that's the other thing, too. Like, sure, physical media is great. It's kind of a reminder of what used to be. But the fact of the matter is that we are stepping toward a new era. We don't do cartridges anymore, for instance. In fact, we really haven't
the Switch is a little bit of
those are cartridge. Those are like USB chips. That's not really...
chips? USB chips?
That's what they are. Look at them.
You know, we talked about The Wizard a few minutes ago, and we talked about Super Mario 3 and how they made a big hay about, it's the first time you ever see the game. Actually, the Japanese got it a year before we did, and we didn't get it until a year later because of a shortage of chips.
Chips.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm just saying, look at those things. I would call those a chip, and a normie would believe me, and that's what we listen to in this world is the normies. So.
The normies. No, don't fear the Reaper. Digital's okay. Just, you know, spend your money as you will, but find the best deal.
Yeah, that's the other thing, too, is, like, part of the reason that I would buy physical games back in the day, if they were available, even these days, is if it's, like, $20 for a game that's normally $40, yeah, you know, I'll take that risk. That's fine.
Well, my recommendation for opting over optical has not changed. I still say if you can get the optical, but I think I'm going to narrow my recommendation down to one simple fact, Corey, and that's it. If you can go for optical, simply because your console will do more.
Yeah.
Like, you can buy used games with optical. You can watch 4K Blu-rays, which look marvelous. You can't do that with digital. But if that's not your thing, if you don't care about used games and you don't care about movies like that, then yeah. I mean, it's your money. Spend it wisely.
Speaking of spending your money wisely, yeah, absolutely. You did spend your money wisely, and that's why we have this big list of game sales.
Woo! So let's go. Let's go from this is the top 20. From 20 on up.
We'll go ahead and churn this real quick, because it's not soup. there's not a lot of stuff here that you wouldn't expect. 20 is UFC 4. 19 is Super Mario Party, which is still selling shockingly well. I guess that's something I would be surprised at seeing. One thing that doesn't surprise me is number 18, which is Cyberpunk 2077. You know, everybody on Reddit can get so mad about this game, but it's still selling like gangbusters, and that's what they listen to.
And they do seem to be fixing it.
Yeah, they're doing stuff. I honestly wouldn't have said that it's unplayable in the first place. Like, maybe on the original consoles, like the PS4 basic, the Xbox One basic, yeah, maybe not so good. But with a decent PC or a more modern console, it's worth a look. It's not bad. 17 is Minecraft PS4 edition specifically. That's kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm. Is the PlayStation 4 edition, now I don't know this or not, I'm not a Minecraft person, but is it compatible with all the other versions, the way all the other versions are compatible with all the other versions?
I believe so. I think all versions of Minecraft are compatible.
Because you don't usually see the NPD separating, like, specific
versions. Yeah, with Minecraft specifically, they don't ever do that, which is, it is interesting. 16 is...
I was going to say, they didn't do it with the Switch version, and that had Mario content. Yeah.
16 is Zelda Breath of the Wild, of course. 15 is Just Dance 2021. 14 is Mortal Kombat 11. I probably would attribute a lot of that to the PS5 and Xbox One updates that it's gotten.
And I want to say, did you see the trailer?
I did. I did see the trailer, and I'm wondering where Chun-Li is.
We're not going to get into that. You know...
Let's not get into that. Anyway, yeah, I saw the trailer. No. It looks pretty good. It really hit the right notes as far as a Mortal Kombat movie goes, and that by that I mean it looks horribly cheesy, and I'm into that.
Yeah, I was going to say, just so you know, we're talking about the Mortal Kombat movie coming out. It was supposed to be theatrical, but now, like all things, it's going right to HBO Max, I think.
Yep.
Alongside Godzilla vs. Kong, which actually looks pretty spectacular.
Yeah, that's something I might consider seeing that one, actually. I've been wanting to get into Godzilla these days, so it might be a good place to start. Number 13 is Immortals Fenyx Rising, which is basically Assassin's Creed for kids. It's pretty good. You know, I reviewed it for our site, and I said the same thing then. It's pretty good. It's not going to redefine how you look at video games, but it has solid fundamentals, and it shows that Ubisoft knows how to make a game, as they always have.
And it went from serious to comedic, from what I understand, right?
It's
a fun game.
Yeah, initially it was a game called Gods and Monsters, and that switched over to the current view, and it's more of a comedy kind of game. It's a lot of fun. Like, it's actually, like, even for you, I think, since you liked Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
I don't really brag about this a little bit, but it was the game I actually gifted to a lot of people.
Really?
Yeah, because I there are a couple friends that, including people who work on this site, that weren't ready for or didn't have the hardware for Assassin's Creed.
Right.
And they wanted something more mythological. And it turns out, and I'll just say it, the game was on sale. This game was so drastically reduced in price. It was already pretty cheap.
Yeah, it dropped extremely quick. I don't think it was ever a full price game, in fact, and they dropped it immediately afterwards, which is a shame too, because again, it's actually really good.
Well, you know what's funny though, and we can move on from this, but when I look at that box, I can't help but think of Kid Icarus.
It looks a lot like it, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like I really want it. It reminded me how much I really, really want a new Kid Icarus, like with modern graphics and like an open world. Like, you can see it. It would be perfect.
Absolutely. I mean, you know how Nintendo does things. They'll rotate between their franchises. I guarantee you'll see one sooner than later. Speaking of franchises that never go away, FIFA 21 is number 12. Number 11 is Mario 3D All-Stars. This merits special mention because you will not be able to buy this collection digitally or otherwise at the end of this coming month.
Well, you'll be able to buy it. You just won't like the price for it because it'll be by a scalper.
Yeah, you'll be
able PlayStation 5.
Yeah, you'll be able to buy the games individually, I'm pretty certain. And the rumor going around is that they'll actually add in Mario Galaxy 2 that you can buy separately. But we'll see if that ends up being the case. And again, if you're going to buy it, you should probably buy it soon. Number 10 is NBA 2K21. Number 9 is Smash Ultimate. Number 8 is Call of Duty Modern Warfare. Number 7 is Ring Fit Adventure. I'm not sure how this can be so high on this list.
I've seen it, by the way. It's back in stores. Yeah, it's
back in stores. I was just about to say, like, I don't know how it could be so high if nobody can find it, but I guess if it's back in stores, then...
Ring Fit Adventure, a.k.a. Wii Fit of the new millennium.
Pretty much. Hey, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same.
You know what's funny? We're in the 20s.
Yep.
Like, we're in the 20s.
We are.
And when's the last time a decade was given a name? Like we're in the 20s, but we're not talking about it like it's the roaring 20s.
I mean, it'd be a little awkward to talk about, like, the 10s, and especially, like, when the millennium turned, like, the aughts, I think I've seen some people say. That's just weird.
Don't say the aughts. Don't do that.
Yeah,
that's
not good.
We're in the 20s.
Ring Fit Adventure? I mean, I've played a little bit of it myself, and it's solid for what it is. If you're into this kind of fitness game, yeah, absolutely worth it. And a lot of these people who are more casual.
Well, I'm going to say something real quick. You're talking about casual, but actually, you know, the Ring Fit Adventure, I think I know why it's so popular. Mm-hmm. I know this is probably not your bag, but do you know there's this, there's a enormous industry that's being built right now based around Peloton bikes, based around the Apple Watch.
You know, my folks have one, actually. Yeah, Peloton. Yeah, it's very popular.
It's so big right now. Like, you can actually subscribe to these services where you actually have channel. Like, you have an Apple TV, right?
Yeah.
You can actually subscribe and get, like, in-depth videos and everything. And I think the Ring Fit Adventure, for what it is a version of that that's a lot more affordable than a $2,000 Peloton bike or whatever.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, your Switch and your Ring Fit, if you can find them both, they're very affordable. And they do the same thing. They keep you in shape at a time when you can't really go out. So there you go.
That's
number
true.
Six. And number six is Mario Kart 8 Deluxe. Number five is Animal Crossing. Number four is Madden NFL 21. Number three is Miles Morales. I've gotten a chance to play it on PS5. Honestly, it's better. It's not that much better. So it says something about the quality of the PS4 version, really.
Well, that says a lot about the quality of PS4 games at the end of its life cycle anyway, because PS4 games look pretty damn good.
Yeah, it really does. Again, it's slightly better. It's got those haptics and stuff, but it's if you get on PS4, still pretty good. Number two.
You know what this was, though? I was going to say, would you say that Spider-Man Miles Morales is basically the... I don't want to say Breath of the Wild, but more like the Twilight Princess of the PS4, because you remember the Twilight Princess when it came out on the Wii and it came out on the GameCube. It was it GameCube?
Yeah, it was GameCube, right? And Wii, yeah.
It was pretty much the same game, just with a few augmented improvements, but it was pretty much the same game.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a very similar concept here. It's a little better. Like, if you're getting a PS5 and you don't have it, it's not bad as a first purchase. But if you just got a PS4, still worth a look. Number two is Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and this is worth mentioning because this is the second fastest selling Assassin's Creed game. Say what you will about Ubisoft, they know how to make a video game, as I was saying earlier, and they also know how to sell a video game. Valhalla is interesting, primarily because it's probably the least Assassin's Creed of all the Assassin's Creed games so far.
I have a confession to make. You got me into this series because I've never been interested in Assassin's Creed.
Right.
And like you, I got pretty excited about Origins. I really, really enjoyed Odyssey. I just thought it went on too long.
Yep.
I think the world agreed with me because they tried to rectify those situations in Valhalla. But can I be honest with you? I think I'm burned out. Like, I have Valhalla, and I've got like 30 hours into it. And I had to reset my PC the other day. And I said, okay, all my stuff's going to be saved in the cloud. But I haven't been excited enough to reinstall it.
You know, that happens. It's definitely something you have to have a taste for, especially because there's so many very similar games that are around right now.
Yeah, I mean, the game looks great, sounds great, plays great, does all the great... It checks off every box. There's so much of it. There's still so much of it, by the way. 30 hours, I'm not complaining. I got my
money's
worth.
There's... Like, I go on for 100 hours easily, especially with DLC coming out next month. Number one, finally, there's so much of it. Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War, of course. Not surprising.
A massive seller, by the way. From what I understand, this game, according to NPD, said it's already the 20th. What is it, 20th or 25th? What do we got on the list? I want to get the numbers right because you care. Okay,
right.
It's the 20th best-selling game of all time.
How about that?
It's insane. You know, it's the only Call of Duty game I haven't played yet.
Really?
Yeah, I usually play these games right after you review them and everything because they send us review copies, but wink, wink, I don't get them all. So
right.
You usually get them. So I usually hunt them out. For some reason, I just haven't been able to see. I want to see Ronald Reagan.
He's in it very briefly.
Yeah, but he's in it.
He is in it. You do see him. It's pretty cool. Do want to mention a couple more things after NPD, though. One thing, of course, is that there was a Nintendo Direct a couple days ago, and that had a lot of cool stuff. Some big ones, Splatoon 3, that's obviously not... It's great. It's not surprising, but it's great. One slightly surprising thing is that they remastered Skyward Sword, Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword.
I was also at that E3 when they showed off the Skyward Sword. This is before I knew you. This right. was the same E3 where they
a
also
dark time
off.
For you.
A dark time. Before the sunshine, before the ray of hope came
BC,
into my life and just... BC. Literally, BC.
Yep.
Yeah, the Age of Enlightenment. No, but a little history here. 2010, they showed off Skyward Sword on the Wii. At the time, you have to remember, this was also the E3 where they also showed off the Xbox Kinect and the PlayStation Move and Skyward Sword. Yep. And the 3DS. It was a major E3. This was a very big one.
Oh, yeah.
And Corey mentioned this before, but no, they actually had the demand for us plebs to see the 3DS was such that they actually had people wandering into the crowd with 3DS prototypes bolted with armed guards to make sure we couldn't touch it and defile it.
Yep.
But I did not – there was nothing to play. They just showed it off. And I got to tell you something. I was very, very happy with what I saw. Mm-hmm. I love the art style of Skyward Sword. But what's really fun about it is, real quick, I didn't watch the Nintendo Direct, but I saw the clips, and the producer of Breath of the Wild, Eiji, what's his name? Do we know?
I don't recall.
I don't remember. But, you know, through Nintendo's hilarious dubbing and subtitling, it kind of bothered me what he said about this game.
What's that?
And so, as we all know, Breath of the Wild has been a monster success.
Yep.
To be honest with you, I think it's the biggest game of the generation. I don't know if anything's going to beat it. And I'm not saying it's the best game. I'm not saying it's the best-selling game. But it's clearly the most talked-about game of this, like, traditional video game of the generation. It's huge. It's the first game that sold more than the console it was on.
Yeah.
But, and everyone at this Nintendo Direct, Corey, thought they were going to show off Breath of the Wild 2.
And they didn't, and people were apparently pretty upset from what I've heard.
But they showed off Skyward Sword, which is a fantastically great game that, like you, I think you would agree, was probably too much for the Wii to handle.
Yeah, one of the you know, it's funny, too, because among the Zelda fan base, Skyward Sword is actually held to not be one of the better ones, and I can't disagree with that anymore. I think it's great.
No, it's great. And what's funny is that little story, and I'll get into this in a second, about how games are reviewed. Again, this game required the Wii expansion thing for the controller. Motion Plus, and I'll be honest with you, the game was revolutionary. I mean, the game was fantastic.
Yep.
But the producer made an apology for the game and said, "Oh, this was he just want to basically warn you, this was a traditional Zelda before we reinvented it." You know, almost despairing, like, "Oh, it's an older game, so it's not going to be open world." But it's like, yep, we don't need to be told that.
Yeah. No, I feel the same way. Like, I don't think there needs to be any effort on the part of developers to bend over for their fans. And that's maybe the same reason I don't really get mad about things like the Direct. You know, I don't have any impact on what they reveal. I just decide if I like it or not. And generally speaking, what I saw was pretty good. Other things I saw that were good, in fact, included a new Mario Golf game. How about that?
You know, the Zelda Skyward Sword, though, has been one of those games that's been sort of rejiggered online through the Dolphin emulators. Like, they've increased the resolution. They've added their own fan packs and everything. The game has completely been transformed.
Yep.
The game is really good, and the soundtrack is good. And what I wanted to say is, a traditional E3, the big console manufacturers used to have these things called conferences, and Sony would have theirs, Microsoft would have theirs, and Nintendo would have theirs. And Nintendo's conferences, Corey, look like something out of space.
Oh yeah.
Like, they didn't look normal. Like, you've seen the Nintendo conferences. They're not like any other conferences. And in this particular one, this was the best Nintendo presentation I have ever seen, and I've seen them all. This is the one where Miyamoto himself, Shigeru Miyamoto, came out wearing a tuxedo and a bow tie. And he came out with a Wii Remote, and he conducted a live orchestra. And and the music they were playing was orchestrated Zelda music. And it's fantastic. Because
really?
I think at the time they were really trying to promote Wii Music, which was a game that was either ahead of its time or just completely misplaced. Like, it should have come out. It should be a thing, but it didn't. And then he announced after the performance that everybody who buys Skyward Sword was going to get a 25th anniversary Zelda orchestrated music CD for free. And Skyward Sword came with a music CD of orchestrated Zelda music.
Hmm.
I mean, just pure happiness, right?
Yeah.
Just pure joy. And I mentioned this before, and this is my final thought about this game. Little insider information for Popsara. When we train editors how to edit, when I do this, I actually use a review. I won't say the website, but you know what I'm talking about. I actually use a very popular review of this game from a fellow website that is so grotesquely overrated, so overdone, and another game, as an example of how hype can infect games.
Yep.
And like you said, people talk about this not being one of the better Zeldas, whatever. But at the time, it was very well regarded. This game was very well respected. This game was a Game of the Year contender. And it deservedly so. Skyward Sword is a very good Zelda game. In some ways, I prefer it to Breath of the Wild, because I kind of like my game straightforward sometimes, like Mario. But no, I'm excited about it. I want to be able to play this game without having to waggle all the time, and that would be kind of fun for me.
So just to hit on a couple other things they talked about, new Mario Golf, they're bringing Fall Guys over to the Switch. They're bringing Outer Wilds, a pretty popular adventure-type game from last year, over to the Switch. But one of the things that really got me, it surprised me, aside from No More Heroes 3, which we knew was coming, I cannot believe they're localizing the Famicom Detective Club games.
That's why I put that on the list.
Yeah, I'm kind of floored that they're doing this. It's not unprecedented. And the reason it's not unprecedented is because last month they actually localized the first Fire Emblem game and brought that over too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's content that was shielded for many, many years.
Yep.
So it's finally – I think we're at the point now – now, you say they're localizing. Are they – they're translating it,
yeah, correct? They are absolutely. It's a full localization. with a new translation that we'd never seen before and everything. And it's not like you couldn't have played these games before. I mean, ROM hacking and emulation has been around for decades. So if you really wanted to play Famicom Detective Club, the option is there for you. But this is a whole new translation, like official, of these games.
Yeah, well, this is a game that Nintendo's endorsing, which is interesting. And, we talked about, and one more final thought about The Wizard. But The Wizard came out in 1989, which is basically a Nintendo product. It's like time traveling. And I talked about this on the other podcast, Corey. It's like you travel back to 1989. It was a very different world. It's gone.
Yes. Yep.
It was a Nintendo world. Like I was talking to Ethan, Ethan from our coast. Mm-hmm. It's like you could wake up in the morning, eat your Nintendo cereal, which was two bags, by the way, green or red for Zelda and Mario.
Sure.
You could watch Nintendo cartoons on TV. You can go to school. You could talk to your other friends about playing the Nintendo Player's Guide. You could trade secrets, swap cartridges, come home, eat more Nintendo cereal. You can watch the Captain N, the Game Master. You can watch Nintendo cartoons. You can watch Excuse Me, Princess on Saturday morning. You can play all this stuff. You can go to McDonald's. You can get a Super Mario 3 this. You can go to the arcade. It was a wonderful time. This was right before gaming became a negative hobby for a lot of people. This was wonderful. It was fantastic.
Yep.
It's gone now.
And now we're kind of tilting back into gaming being just the thing that people do instead of such a negative thing. So and there's that.
But you know what's funny, though? When you go back, you were talking about time traveling. Mm-hmm. While all this was happening in our English-speaking worlds, in Japan, the Famicom was like an alternate dimension. It was like the metaverse. The Famicom had its own thing. You could buy Famicom discs in gas stations at vending machines.
Yeah.
You could go on the internet.
There were little machines that they had that you could put your Famicom discs into, and it would write games to them.
Well, like I said, you can go on the internet. Like yes. You can get stocks on your Famicom. You can print out things. It was fantastic.
Yep.
It's like so you had this alternate universe, and the fact every time I see Famicom stuff coming to America, I'm just like, wow, the planets are emerging.
Yeah, it's pretty great stuff. Like I'm really happy to see it. But like the other big thing that we didn't have mentioned here, the biggest news for me out of the entire Nintendo Direct, and this is why I can't complain about it, because I love this.
Yeah.
They're bringing a remastered port of A Legend of Mana.
I saw that.
That's again, I think I've mentioned a couple times, that and Vagrant Story, my two favorite games ever made. So, can't wait.
You're getting what you want. Now, you're not excited. I noticed you didn't get excited about the new Star Wars Hunters.
You know, I don't really know enough about it.
They didn't show anything.
Yeah, but, you know.
But it's... But doesn't this make you excited? It's a competitive, free-to-play online shooter from the makers of Farmville.
From Rovio, okay.
Yeah, from which, by the way, RIP Farmville, by the way, finally gone.
Yeah, Farmville is toast. You know, I'm not going to ever approach a multi-billion-dollar property being handled by a multi-billion-dollar company and say, oh, this is going to be bad.
I'll say this. Do you remember Contra 4 on the DS?
I do. It was pretty good.
It was pretty good. From the makers of, I think it was Leapfrog Games? Mm-hmm. For preschoolers, so I think it was Way Forward at the time. Before
Way
they became,
Forward, yes.
Yeah, so Way Forward has their genesis in like preschool games, and then they went to make one of the better Contra games.
And then
and they're still around, by the way. They're still doing their thing.
Remember Contra Rogue Core? Me either. Nobody else does. Ha.
That was a PlayStation game, wasn't it?
Contra Rogue Core was the one that came out last year.
No. You're talking about the top-down crap?
Yes.
Oh, no, I forgot. I erased that from my memory.
Good, that's probably for the best. Finally, the other one we've got here is a new game from the people who made Mario Kart Home Circuit, which is Knockout City.
Knockout City.
You know, again, not something I know enough about to really say yes or no. Reminded me a little bit of Ninja Law for some reason.
Well, you haven't played Mario Kart Live yet, have you?
No.
Or it's which is a game that sounds like Mousetrap to me, which I don't even know why it's a game, but it's you need a lot of space.
Right.
And you need a lot of preparation work for that. But
sounds
and I don't
pain.
Know if the yeah, but it was a bestseller.
Really?
But it was $100 per cart.
Huh.
Yeah, $100. For Mario yeah, $100 for the Mario, $100 for the Luigi.
Crazy.
No Wario though. No Princess Peach.
No Waluigi?
You'd think like that's a thing though. Like the Labos, all this physical media stuff that Nintendo like that's I don't know. I'm not really into it, but I know a lot of people are. So yep. Knockout City, yeah.
That's pretty much what we got.
That's not a bad showing. You didn't get Breath of the Wild 2, but you got a lot of stuff you didn't
I'm
know
sure
you
were
we'll see
get. Breath of the Wild 2 at Digital E3 or whatever. Like, I wouldn't... I don't think we have long to wait.
Well, I think... do you have any other things to comment on? Anything you're looking forward to next month?
Next month is actually pretty packed. The big one for me is going to be Monster Hunter Rise. And that
that's,
comes out...
That's a Switch game?
That's a Switch exclusive, actually. I'm sure it won't stay that way, but for now it is. That's March 26th. That's pretty exciting. What else? We got a new Harvest Moon game. That's pretty cool. What else do we have here? We have all the Kingdom Hearts games coming to PC.
I'm obligated, by the way, to tell you that the Monster Hunter movie, which came out Christmas, which nobody saw because A, nobody was going to theaters, and that's also when Wonder Woman 84 and Soul came out on VOD.
You're going to surprise me and say that it wasn't that bad, right?
I haven't seen it yet. I know our own Chris Mitchell is reviewing a VOD copy right now. Sure. I believe it out right now? February 16th it came out last week. Huh. So if you want to see Monster Hunter the movie, directed by the man who made the original Mortal Kombat, you know, starring his ex-wife, the star of Resident Evil herself, Mila Jovovich.
That must have been a rough direction. Like, oh, my ex-wife is here and she's starring in my film. What do I do?
But she starred in like 10 of them. Like, yeah. She was in all the Resident Evil game. Evil movies, sorry.
Right.
Which I only liked the first one, but I guess people they made like 10 of them or 7 of them.
It's kind of sprawled off into its own thing.
They're rebooting it though. The reboot movie comes out I think later this year or next year, and like you said, the Mortal Kombat reboot comes out this year. So yeah, we're talking about movies, not the games. Yeah. So
last thing I've got, by the way, last thing game related. I've been spending the last past couple days playing the Guilty Gear Strive beta.
I was going to say, speaking of Arc, well, we talked about WayForward, but that's Arc System Works.
Yeah. Guilty Gear Strive, fantastic. I cannot wait. It's coming out in April. Hopefully it's going to be a bestseller because it's a really solid fighting game.
Well, that's so interesting you said it's a beta because I've gotten messages from them as well. Is it Atlas publishing it?
I think so. I'd have to check.
Well, the fact they're doing a beta for a fighting game is interesting.
It's not surprising, and they needed to do it because while the fighting itself is great, they have like a lobby system to actually matchmake for your fights, and that's going to need a little bit of tweaking.
Well, the reason I bring it up, right, is because what was the last one? Evo tournaments, which sort of disintegrated for many, many reasons.
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. And it's not just the pandemic. Yep. But let's just say this. We are now in a new world. Whether you like it or not, whether we go back to the old or the new, the world of fighting games has always been, despite the online nature, it's always been a place where a bunch of people go into a room and play, which is fine. It's exciting. But that's going to change. And I think the fighting game world is going to change. I'm wondering if Guilty Gear is positioning itself, because I don't really hear a lot about that from other fighting games as much.
You know, one thing I can say about Strive is that as hard as it is to find a match, when you find one, it is rock solid, completely perfect.
Yeah, they're putting in the work.
Yeah, with that rollback netcode that makes it feel good. So
what's it going to be on? Everything?
Everything, pretty much. Yeah.
Everything. Yeah. Like let's.
I'm sorry. I got to correct myself there. It's a PlayStation and PC exclusive.
What?
Yeah. Oh, for now. No Xbox.
That's a time thing. Well, the Xbox doesn't surprise me, but let's just be honest. The Xbox doesn't surprise me. It's not
I wouldn't be surprised if we saw one of those fancy cloud Switch versions at some point.
Well, does it need? Because the other Guilty Gear games were on the. We're on the Switch. Like, yeah. Is it 2D still? Does it need to be? Is it 3D? What's the graphics?
It's like XR, the last one. So it's kind of a 2D. It's a 2D game presented with 3D models that are cel shaded.
I would love to see Arc System Works redo Darkstalkers.
Yeah, it'd be great. If it looked like this, it's out of control. Yeah.
That's a franchise that's never come back, and I don't understand why. I don't know.
It's inevitable. I mean, especially because Capcom is, you know, Capcom's getting their stuff together. They've been for the past few years. That last Mega Man game, speaking of which, where's their next one? The last one was a knockout. It's amazing.
Yeah, they're getting. We're at the point now where I hate to say this, fans are doing a better job of reliving the experience other than the original creators.
Yep.
So, yeah, we got
anyway,
a lot coming out.
What we got.
That's a lot, and yep. I think that's a wrap for the State of Gaming podcast brought to you by PopZara.com. This has been Nathan Evans. I am the managing editor of PopZara.com, and that other melodious voice you hear is senior games editor, Mr. Corey G-Man Gallagher. Corey,
hey.
Thank you once again.
Hey, thank you.
Am I doing it okay?
Yeah, you're doing it great, but you got to say the catchphrase.
Okay, you ready?
Yep, do it.
I love the power glove. It's so bad.
That's not the catchphrase.
Okay, welcome to the next level.
Nope.
We'll see you on the next level.
There it is.
There it is. Bye-bye.
Subscribe to the PopZara podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app or service today.